Hi, my name is Jose Luis Mendoza, and I am the co-host of Hola Cultura's new bilingual podcast, UndocuLife, with support from the DC Oral History Collaborative. The United States currently has more immigrants than any other country in the world. According to a 2020 United Nations report, 18% of the U.S. population is foreign-born. But with DACA constantly challenged in court, and the erosion of rules protecting asylum seekers, many people are facing uncertainty about their future here in the United States. As it stands today, the Department of Homeland Security is no longer accepting new DACA applications. Meaningful immigration reform may be up in the air, with possible shifts in the U.S. House and Senate taking place every few years. On this uncertain note, we bring UndocuLife to an end, for now at least. The following panel discussion was recorded last month at Washington, D.C.'s Mount Pleasant Neighborhood Library. At the October 12th discussion, three of the UndocuLife narrators, Hersin, Brenda, and Maria, spoke with Hola Cultura's Lucia Matamoros. They expanded on their memories, thoughts, and opinions about what it was like to come to the United States as children and grow up in Washington, D.C. Some of the discussion topics involved the sacrifices their parents made to bring them here, the pressures to be a model immigrant, the culture shock of living in D.C., missing foods from home, and finding new comfort foods, and eventually creating a new home. Here's Lucia Matamoros starting the conversation off.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Lucia. I'm the editor assistant in Hola Cultura, and I'm also working in the project of the podcast. This is a project that we're doing with all of our heart. I want to open the panel discussion now, presenting Gerson, Brenda, and we're going to be talking about a little bit of all the experience that you had coming to the U.S. So, Gerson and Brenda, you came to the United States being a child, like very young, and also your parents moved to the country before you. How was this experience of being alone in your country and then moving to the United States? How was the process?
So, I was with my grandma back then. So, my mom left, and she left me in the care of my grandma, who has been the person who has seen me grow during that time. And that this, like, all that was made. I miss my mom always, but like still didn't, I was not alone. So I was still with my grandma. And then after that, I think coming to reunite with my mom after my grandma passed away, it was a different experience to just be missing like somebody who was a mother, dealing with the death of my grandma and then dealing with like the absence of my mom during those periods of time that I was not with nobody. I was with my aunt during that time. So it was different than being with somebody who was like a caretaker, like mom. And then coming here was like just a different experience, just evaluating everything, like different school, different friends, and seeing everything that was way different, just different language and starting to learn.
Same question?
Yes.
Hi, everybody. Also, I just wanted to take a second to acknowledge like how much work everybody's putting into creating this podcast. And not just from like what we see today, you know, with like all of the technology, which looks, you know, really difficult, but also all the editing and just Nadia and everybody who sat down with us for hours to just like listen to us narrate our story. So really appreciate the Hola Cultura team as always. And yeah, to answer your question, yeah, it was very difficult. My mom came to the U.S. when I was 7 years old, and we stayed in the care of our grandma for almost 3 years. And it wasn't just me, it was also my siblings. So I was 7, my sister was 6, and my brother was 5. And growing up without your mom is really difficult. Let alone, like, at that point, like, my mom was already a single mother, my dad wasn't in the picture. So just to lose our dad, you know, first, because he just didn't want to be part of it, was really difficult. And then for my mom to make such a brave decision of like coming to the U.S., you know, it was an incredible decision that I appreciate, but it was hard at the moment. And it was kind of hard to see, you know, like why she was doing it, because my world was so little, you know, like my mom was my world. And for her to just like take off, I was like, oh, like, what am I going to do? But it was also a really important moment for me because it kind of, you know, like took off like the childhood glasses a little bit. Because I'm the oldest sister, so I was like, okay, my mom is gone, so now it's like up to me to take care of my siblings. and I was seven, you know, so I was like, reflecting on it now, it was, yeah, really difficult, but also really thankful that I had my grandma. And then coming to the US and then leaving my grandma behind to be with my mom was also really difficult. So yeah, just like Gerson, it was a really difficult moment of transition.
So Gerson, you had a really rough trip coming to the US. You can tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so my mom actually called me one time after my grandma died a few months later. And she was like, do you want to come to your reunite with me? Or do you want to actually come here, stay and have a birthday party? Of course, I chose to reunite with my mom because who wouldn't, right? And I decided when the person who was coming with me was my godfather. He's the one who came to El Salvador, and then we traveled from to meet a coyote in Honduras. Then when we went to Guatemala, Belize, and lastly Mexico. So it was a trip where I took trucks, walking, and then when there was a part that I actually don't tell that many people, but there was a part where I actually got kidnapped by the people that actually were with me, people who were bringing us to the United States. And they asked my mom for more money. But at that point, I wasn't with them, actually. I was already in the hands of immigration. So I got detained by immigration when I was crossing the river. When I was crossing the river, there was supposed to be somebody expecting on the other side, like somebody was supposed to wait for us. But there was nobody there. So I had to wander the streets for a whole day. And then some first person helped us out. And then my godfather's wife made a decision to actually like make a call actually in front of Walmart. And next thing I know, a white man appeared, and it was immigration. They put me in a room. It was a cold room, a little bit colder than DC weather right now. And I remember getting fingerprinted. They tried to take a picture of me, but they couldn't. I was crying. I couldn't take a picture. And then they took me to a back room, and they asked a lot of questions. They were like, who are you with? What are you doing here? Who are you? What's your name? Where are you going? And they kept asking questions. I remember I didn't know the answer for all of them. And when I was there, I don't remember how much time I was there. So I don't even remember. And then somehow I was let go because they were able to communicate with my mom. And I was able to let go during that time. And my mom's co-worker had to go pick me up. Somebody who had a green card holder because my mom was afraid, right? I was in Texas. She couldn't travel as an undocumented person. And somebody had to go pick me up, so somebody who had a green card had to go pick me up.
As a kid, did you understand what were you doing at that time?
No, I just knew that I was being reunited with my mom. I already knew that I was coming here to see my mom, who hadn't seen for a year. And I was leaving my friends behind, leaving people I knew, and coming to a new place. I always tell people that every time I picture United States, I picture Miami because of Gordo Da Placa, which is this TV show, and I always picture that. So it was weird, different when I came to DC, and I was like, wait, where's the beaches?
Well, Brenda, when you were coming to United States, you were also separated with your dad. Your dad was going with you in the trip, right? So how was that experience of feel that you were separated and you had to go with people that you didn't know back then?
Yeah, so my dad actually came back into the picture to help us cross the border, but it wasn't for good intentions. He also wanted to cross, so he was like, well, if they're going, I'm gonna tag along with them. Yeah, it was just difficult. I've been narrating and like telling folks my story ever since I was 15, you know, and it's so, so difficult to this point to like retell it and go back to these moments. So just bear with me and like be patient. It doesn't get easier to reflect on it. Yeah, it was hard. So the plan was that he was gonna cross with us all the way to the United States, but the plans changed, you know? It's like, there are things that, you know, like the people who are helping you cross just like decide to do because it's cheaper or because they wanna get something out of it. So me and my siblings were handed off to these two girls that we didn't know. And we weren't entirely sure of what the plan was in the first place. Like Gerson said, we knew that we were gonna get reunited with my mom, but didn't even like think about like what that process is gonna look like. But yeah, so we got separated from my dad and we were with these two girls and these two girls handed us to a group of guys who helped us cross the river in Texas. And it's just really difficult to transition from person to person as you're a young kid with your siblings. And I mentioned it in the first piece of the trailer where I was like, oh my goodness, like, I gotta stay awake. You know, like, I don't know who these people are. I know that I'm alone with my siblings, and I know that we have to cross to get to the other side to see my mother. But it was just a moment of like, okay, like, no sleep, you know, you're in like literal like survival mode. And yeah, it was intense. But yeah, I'll let you introduce yourself. We did introductions, and yeah.
Hi guys, sorry for coming late. My name is Maria Nunez. I'm a full-time student at UDC, majoring in criminal justice. I came here when I was 4, so I've been here for a long time already. I'm 21 now, so
yeah. So Maria, so you had a different experience than Gerson and Brenda. So can you tell us about how was moving with your family to United States, that stage of your life?
So I was actually told that we were just coming here to visit because my aunt lived here. So I wasn't really told that we were coming here to live officially. So it was pretty hard to find out that I wasn't going to see my grandma and my grandpa, which I was really close to, because I was raised by them, because my mom and my dad used to, I don't know how to say it in English, but they were viajeros. So they would get like products from El Salvador and bring them here. And if people wanted to send their family members anything, they would bring them here. They were kind of like, say, like UPS, like internationally. So I was raised by my grandma and my grandpa because of that. So it was pretty hard to find out that I wasn't going to see my grandma and my grandpa again. So we came here by visa, and I remember I came here with one Care Bear luggage, and I was afraid of the airplanes, especially at night. It was like there was no lights, like it was just all dark. So that was a really scary experience. But I was told after a while that we weren't going to go back, because I kept asking, like, when are we going to go see my grandma? When are we going to see my grandpa? And they're like, no, sweetie, we're going to stay here officially. So that was really hard. It caught me off guard. It was something that was hard to, you know, get used to, especially with the language barrier. I had to go to ESOL, and yeah, it was, yeah.
So I want to ask you, the three of you, so Maria, you mentioned in your interview that you felt the pressure of being an immigrant child here in the United States. So I want to know if also Gerson and Brenda feel it, and maybe Maria, you can start telling us a little bit of how you felt and why you were feeling this pressure.
I spoke about the pressure that I feel as an immigrant, especially first generation of going to college. It is a lot of pressure because you are consistently reminded that your parents left everything behind for your future, for you to have a good future. So it's just the expectations that we have also as first generation immigrants to go to college, because it's like you have to show that you're here to be better. Like, for example, my mom, she cleans houses. So she's constantly reminding me, like, you don't want to have this job. Like, go to school. Like, get good grades. Be better. And it's just constantly reminding me, like, you have to be better and you have to strive. And it's just like a big weight on my shoulders. So yeah, it's just the concept of we have to be better, and also like kind of the norm, I guess. I don't know like if that's a good word, but as immigrants, we are viewed like we're not viewed good, but there's people out here that view immigrants as we're coming here and we're just taking stuff from the government, like we're not here to, you know, provide for the economy, provide for the United States. So it's just showing them that no, it's not like that. Like we're here to be good, like, you know, study, work, you know what I'm saying? So it's just, it's that, like, it's also that expectation of we have to show that we're here for good reasons. And yeah.
Thank you for highlighting that. And I wanna add a little bit of on top of what Maria said. And yeah, it's a constant pressure. And Gerson and I, and I don't know if you're also documented, but also having DACA, you know, added another extra layer of pressure, because it's not only your family who is looking at you, looking for you to be the one who succeeds and can provide back to the family, but it's also having DACA. So now you have like society's eyes on you. And it's like, oh, now we gave you DACA, like now we're betting on you in order to succeed as immigrant kids in the society. So yeah, definitely a lot of pressure, a lot of eyes on us. Assimilation is also really hard. You know, we like come from like very like big cultural communities like Mexico and Salvador that have their own traditions, their own peoples, their own languages. And so coming here and to be expected to assimilate and to walk this way and to talk this way, it's also really hard. So assimilation, you know, like having all of those eyes on you are incredibly hard, especially when you want to explore other things, you know? Like you don't necessarily want to be like the straight A student who is a valedictorian, who is an activist, who has a good job, you know? Like you want to do other things, you know? I keep on joking with my mom sometimes that, you know, I'm like, you know, like sometimes I wish I could just like take off on a van and, you know, like travel the world like a hippie. And she's like, oh my God, please don't do that. You know, I'm like relying on you. I can just see it in her face. But, you know, it's also all of those things. Sometimes like society puts you in a bubble and your family does too. And sometimes it's really hard to get out of it because like Maria said, you know, like, you internalize that and you're like, damn, like now I have this privilege, now I have access, now I need to be the one to support my family. So it almost feels as like, you know, like you have society and your family as these like tiny little people on your literal shoulders.
Yeah, I think for me growing up was the pressure of education, right? You had to be like education was the priority for you as a child and as immigrants, because we don't want to talk about it, but our parents have a different pressure, which is economically, right? They're the ones who are giving to our own, ourselves, right? They're the ones who are providing. For me, they provided everything. My mom provided everything for me. My mom is a single mother, and she provided everything. The reason that I went to school was because of her. But she also has the burden of like having to be the caretaker of the rest of the family in El Salvador, because my family actually comes from a poor family. They are farmers, and some of them are not getting a lot of money. You know, Salvador is a poor country. What is $20 here, what we don't value, $20 over there is really valuable. And so our parents, my mom took that responsibility of taking care of my family. So that was the pressure he had. And I think for me was going to college, getting that degree. And now I think as I get closer to getting more older and older, I'm like, my mom thinking about leaving jobs, it's like now it's the pressure of me going into that responsibility of providing for my family who is back in Salvador. So thinking about that and thinking more of those priority pressures that we have.
And going back a little bit to how was the culture shock or things that are different to our countries. So there was one thing that you said, Gerson, that you noticed that there was like white, black people, like Hispanics, and that also happened to me. Like, we don't think sometimes that way in Latin America. So how was that experience, and also for you, Brenda and Maria, like if you felt the same way, or what was like the most different thing you found here when you moved?
Yeah, I think over there, I didn't know about colorism. I didn't think about like skin colors. I didn't think about anything like that. I had classmates who were Afro-Latino and who were, I just didn't think we were just similar. We were Salvadorians. But when it was here, it was more labels and it was more of like splits. And then we do have anti-blackness of our communities and we know that, right? That's one thing that we have always have to speak about no matter what, because our community has that. And I think that was one thing that I also picked up when I was little, anti-blackness in our communities, because I also had that stereotype of what black people were. And then once I grew up and continued growing up with the community that I went to, I got those stereotypes broken down and it was like, oh, hey, no, we're all together, we're humans. And it was really different to see that. But in the United States, it's like seeing the labels like split, no matter what, it's really big. And also just different cultures it hits a lot.
Yeah, just like the clash of like people to hear. I'm originally from Mexico and there is not a lot of Mexicans in DC. The predominant Spanish speaking community is from El Salvador and other communities from Central America. So that was really weird. Seeing a lot of black folks, it was just really difficult to connect with them. I grew up in Columbia or in Petworth, Shaw Howard, I don't know what they call that neighborhood, by Georgia Avenue and Harvard Street, like two blocks away from Howard University. And before they demolished it, I went to Bruce Monroe Elementary School. Yeah, so the school was predominantly, it was almost half black, half Salvadorian. So it was weird because I couldn't talk to the black folks because they didn't speak Spanish. And then talking to the Salvadorians, it was really difficult because yes, we both spoke Spanish, but we just didn't know anything about each other's cultures. And sometimes, even in Spanish, there are some words that are just so different. Like, I remember I kept on, you know, like asking for a popote, you know? And the Salvadorians are like, a popote, what? And I'm like, popote, you know, for my drink. And they just had no clue of what it is. And in Mexico, we mesh a lot of Nahuatl words with Spanish, you know? So, popote means straw, if you guys didn't know. But then they're like, oh, you mean el pitillo, el, you know? Like, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know? That's what I meant. So that was definitely a big clash. Also the food, Mexican cuisine is just like so big. And yeah, just like coming here and not having access to it was at first very difficult, you know, but then you learn about pupusas and Ethiopian food and you're like, okay, I'm gonna be okay.
I think for me was just as Brenda said, it was the food. It just did not taste the same as it did in El Salvador. So I think it was mostly that. It was just the food. Like in El Salvador, there's Salvadorian food. Like there's not really a mix of other cultures over there. So when I came here, it was really different. So it was the food. The food was definitely a culture shock for me. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely food is always something like important for us. Yeah. So right now, immigration is one of the main topics for the government. And the population of Latinos is growing so fast. So now Latinos represent a very important percentage of the population here in the United States. And by 2027, we're going to represent the 30% of the workforce. So it's very important to have like good education and opportunities. So how do you feel during your process growing up as undocumented and as Latino here in the United States? Do you feel support? Do you feel that it was hard? Or do you feel like desventajas at some point?
So I didn't know what it meant to be undocumented in the United States until, let's say, high school. Which, of course, like in high school, you're getting ready to go on to the next step, which is college, and you're starting to think about the future. So I think being undocumented is really hard, especially I felt like in high school, it was really tough. I felt like I couldn't go to my college counselor and ask for help because she didn't have the experience with other undocumented high schoolers that wanted to go to college. Because I feel like some of us as undocumented students felt like there was no other future after high school. It was, after this, you go straight into the work, like you go to work, like there is no further education. So it was really tough for me in high school, especially as a junior and a senior, because I couldn't apply for FAFSA. I couldn't apply to so many other scholarships that my other classmates could apply to. So for me, it got to a point where I'm like, okay, I can't, there's no other way for me. Like maybe college isn't something that I can reach for, but it's just that, like it's realizing that there's so many obstacles in our way to go to another like type of education after high school. Another thing I think for me is, since I'm currently majoring for criminal justice, it's mostly a major where, you know, you could go into the police force or you can become a lawyer. You can do, like, there's so many options, but, like, it's hard because I also have to think about I'm undocumented. So it's going to be hard to find a job, especially if it's a job that I really want to do. There was an internship, actually, that I really, really wanted to do. And I read the requirements, and unfortunately, you had to have a work permit or had to be a citizen or a resident. I don't have any of that. So it was really hard for me to kind of just let it go because it was something that I really, really wanted to do. But yeah.
Just to reflect a little bit on that question, or how I'm going to respond is like specifically to DC, right? Because being somebody from Latin America and the US looks very different depending on what state you're in. But here in DC, I did feel very supported when it came to like finding services, finding opportunities. I mean, of course, you know, like applying for college was really traumatizing. It was so bad that my counselor was telling me that I should go to France because in France, there is more opportunities for undocumented people. And, you know, she was an expert, you know? So I was like, oh, like, maybe I should go to France. And I even pitched it to my mom, you know? And then she made me realize, you know, that it wasn't actually possible. But, yeah, so I did feel very supported. And, of course, here in the district, you know, like, there is Washington, D.C., and then there is D.C., you know? Like, so did I feel supported by the federal government? To this day, not really. But here in DC, the community is organized, especially the immigrant community. And it's not just the Spanish-speaking community. When I was 15, I actually started to organize with a group of immigrant youth. And it was a very multicultural, multi-ethnic, multilingual group. We had students from China, from Ethiopia, from Cameroon, from El Salvador, Mexico, Guatemala. So we were really organized. And you know, like, I actually just learned about this, or just this documentary called La Mamplesa, and it talks about the May 5th, 1991 riots that happened here in Mount Pleasant, and how the community started to organize themselves, you know? So a lot of the support that I experienced as an organizer here in the district, a lot of it comes back to that 1991 riot, when the Salvadoran community in particular was just like, we're tired, we need support. And they were so angry and like, there was like such raw anger that they rioted. So then the government started to give more support, but also like the community stayed organized. So it's really cool to, you know, like be able to grow in this multi-ethnic community that is very much organized. And again, it's not just a Spanish-speaking community. Like 14% of DC is immigrant. and the five most spoken languages are Spanish, French, Vietnamese, Chinese, and Amharic. So it's really cool, and it seems like such a tiny place too. Especially growing up in Duke Avenue, like that community, you know, like there's just like so much community. So yeah, so definitely felt supported, and you know, like on top of that, you know, we have the Black community that is very much organized, you know, to the point that we have, you know, like places like Howard University, which is a historically Black university. So it's really cool to be here in terms of that, because the one thing that I've learned is that, you know, like the community like really takes care of each other, like very radically.
I think as an immigrant, we have many challenges throughout our life, and I had so much support from the teachers. And I remember one teacher in particular, Ms. Monroe, Ms. Bird. She died a while back, but she was amazing. She took a baby book and taught me English word by word, just repeating it. And that's how, like, the support I had, right? The community that I was part of, I felt the support. When it comes to politicians, that's different, right? We don't get that support. They see us as political talking points and seeing us as pawns. They don't see us as people. And we can see this right now as they are busing migrants here just for a political stance, right? They don't see the lives that are affecting the people who are coming in there. So they all have, like, it's just a political game for them. And we just saw it, like, for us DACA recipients too, we just saw it with the courts and the attacks that have been, that happening with the courts and every time, right? So I think it's always different challenges when it comes to support from our communities and then seeing the opposition, like the politicians, and seeing their games.
Thank you to everyone for listening to the first season of UndocuLife. This is our final episode, but we may be back with a new season once there's more news about DACA. Thank you to Brenda, Hersin, Maria, Jacinto, and Carla for being a part of this project and sharing their stories with us. Every single narrator was open and vulnerable throughout this project, and we hope everyone enjoyed listening to them. Thank you to Abel Nunez, Juliana Macedo do Nascimento for letting us interview them for our first episode. And thank you to everyone on our Hola Cultura team who helped make this podcast possible. We would also like to thank the DC Oral History Collaborative for funding this project. Thank you.